Welcome to In the Hive, I'm Roger McDonough. Not that long ago, I was walking around outside of KCPW's studios here on Library Square in downtown Salt Lake City, and I came across a kind of sad sight. Two small slate-gray birds with white bellies and yellow-dipped tails were lying dead on the ground. And, well, it presented kind of a mystery to me. So I snapped a photo, sent it off to a contact at Great Salt Lake Audubon, a chapter of the National Audubon Society, to see if they had any idea how these two beautiful birds, a couple of cedar waxwings, had met their untimely end. There are many threats to birds around the world. Habitat destruction, pollution, climate change. These are all human-caused problems, and really they are all very recent threats on the long evolutionary timescale. Of course, it's not only birds. The World Wildlife Fund estimates that two-thirds of the planet's wildlife have disappeared in just the last 50 years. Habitat loss is probably the primary driver of those extinctions, but the threats posed specifically to migratory bird species, and most of the birds found in the U.S. migrate, those threats are myriad and complex. Today, we're zeroing in on a project looking at the impact the human-built environment of cities is having on birds. Because the waxwings I saw on Library Square, it turns out, were most likely the victims of a window strike, meaning something about the reflective glass at the old main library, now the site of the Leonardo, confused them, and they collided with the building at full speed. And it's possible that you're listening and thinking to yourself, so what? Well, it's just one piece of the puzzle, a huge puzzle that encompasses the tapestry called life on Earth and its decline. And it turns out there's a study well underway looking at the problem of architecture, window strikes, and bird deaths here in Salt Lake City. And there's also a way for the public to get involved. To learn more, I spoke with two of the people behind the project. Cooper Farr is Director of Conservation with Tracy Aviary in Salt Lake City. And Jean LeBaire is a board member with Great Salt Lake Audubon, who chairs that organization's Bird Window Collision Working Group. Cooper Farr and Jean LeBaire, thank you very much for joining me today.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So there are, of course, a lot of threats to birds out there, and I would imagine that at the worldwide level, habitat loss is probably the biggest threat to birds. We're going to focus on one specific threat from humans or from the human-built environment in just a moment, but I'm wondering if you might be able to give a kind of overview of just how dire the situation is for birds in the context of biodiversity loss in general around the world.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, it's not looking good out there. So a recent study found that we've lost almost 3 billion birds since 1970 in North America alone. So that's a loss of 1 in 4 birds that used to be out there on the landscape that are no longer there. So it's not looking good. Certainly, habitat loss is a big leading factor of why we're losing so many birds. But collisions are also a really big problem for birds. So collisions are the third leading cause of, you know, human-caused mortality to birds out there.
And when we say collisions, we're talking about birds colliding with structures, with windows generally, right?
Yep, absolutely. Birds can't perceive glass the way that we can and collide with it quite often.
The third biggest cause, how do we have a rough estimate of, I mean, what that means in terms of numbers of birds?
Yeah, we definitely have estimates out there. So, right now, it looks like up to 1 billion birds die each year from colliding with windows in North America. So quite a few birds.
Why does it happen? I mean, I guess it's because we've built all these buildings. But other than that, what's the sort of mechanisms that confound the birds? I mean, you said they can't see the glass?
Yeah, that's correct. And I don't know if, Jean, if you want to talk about this as well, because you certainly educate people about it. But it's the way that their eyes work. They really just can't perceive the glass the way that humans can see it. So either they see through the glass if it's transparent and think they can fly right through to, you know, vegetation or something else on the other side. Or they're seeing a reflection, and often we have trees and other things planted around buildings and houses, and they just see the reflection of that vegetation and think they can fly into it.
Wow. And Jean, is that, I mean, a pretty apt description? I'm imagining that it depends upon the time of day as well. Light pollution plays into this as well?
Yeah. So, you know, birds have not evolved with this glass that we now have in our environment. And if you think about how many windows there are out there, I mean, across the United States, you know, and if one bird hits one window with all this glass, I mean, we're talking about, you know, a billion birds a year, potentially. When they hit the glass, sometimes they're just stunned and they'll fall to the ground, and maybe they'll be able to recover enough to get up and move into a bush, which might be where they'll die a few days later from the internal injuries that occur from the concussion from hitting the building. So it really is a very sad story. But the good thing is, it's something that has a solution. There are things that we can do to make our windows visible to birds. There are products that are available that people can put on their windows, you know, things they can do related to light. So it is a problem that has a solution if people are aware of what, you know, those various solutions are.
You mentioned that birds haven't evolved to deal with this, and there's that long evolutionary time frame of animals fitting into niches and ecological specialization down to the cellular level. And then humans have made this big cognitive jump, and we've started rather suddenly transforming the environment. The challenges are myriad, and, you know, we talked about habitat loss, there's climate change, there's pollution, and then there's just the way the environment itself has changed. I think I'm just rambling here. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, one thing, just another huge problem for birds that has an easy solution is cats. And cats is the number two cause of bird death. So we have habitat loss is our first, and then we have cats. If you allow your cat to go outside, they are predators, and that is their instinct. And just keeping your cat inside can save hundreds of thousands of birds. And so it is, honestly, it is better for the cat as well, thinking about its health, thinking about the potential for it to be squashed. So, you know, cats and windows are things that have an easy solution, and we can do something about that. Where habitat loss, I mean, there are things that we can do. It's a much bigger issue, you know, as we expand our population and our development.
Well, you talked about solutions, I guess, when it comes to products you can put on your windows, what do they do? How do they alert the birds to the fact that there's something there?
Well, one thing that people need to think about when they want to mitigate their windows is whatever you do to the window needs to be on the outside of the window. So oftentimes people think, oh, if I just draw my curtain, well, that may help a little bit, but it's really better if the solution is on the outside. So one thing people do is this, what they call an Ecopian curtain, and it's actually a very simple solution. It's paracord, parachute cord, and people arrange that across their windows, spacing it about 4 inches apart. And it's on the outside of the window, and it sort of gently blows in the breeze, and, you know, it doesn't really obstruct your view. And that's one thing you can do, is put something like that on your windows. Certainly bird tape and decals. And if you stop by the Tracy Aviary, you'll notice that they have wonderful decals on all of their windows. And again, those decals, and they actually use the best color, which is gold. Although they come in a lot of different colors. But there's this, so putting that on your windows can help. And there's this feather-friendly tape that you can put on your windows. They say it lasts about 4 years, but I have heard stories that it lasts longer than that. So it takes a little bit of time to get that on your windows. But again, a solution that you can do on your own, or you could hire someone to put the bird-friendly tape on your windows if you wanted. And there are companies that are developing windows that birds can see. So whether that's UV or whether the windows are fritted or etched or, you know, various kinds of film, you know, those kinds of things, if you can do that from the get-go in the building process rather than having to retrofit your windows, you know, that's a good thing to be thinking about.
So there are like cheaper options for, you know, ways that people can help mitigate this problem. So even something as simple as putting out some tempera paint out on the outside of your window, maybe having the kids come and decorate the windows on the outside, anything that breaks up that, you know, glass reflection will help out the birds. And it's also important to think about how far apart your decals or tape or whatever it is spaced. And so generally there's a 2x4 rule. So you want things to be no more than 4 inches, you know, wide apart and 2 inches tall, because these birds are really small and they're used to like flying in between branches. And so sometimes they think they can get right through the decals that people have on their windows.
I know that there's a sort of study that's been being conducted that has a citizen science aspect to it.
Yeah, so back in 2017, Tracy Avieri began a project where we were bringing community scientists or, you know, volunteer members of the public together to go out and investigate this problem out in Salt Lake City. And so we partnered with the Salt Lake chapter of the International Dark Sky Association to get the project off the ground, because there is a really big interaction between light pollution and birds being drawn into cities and then colliding with windows once they're in the city. And so the basic idea is that we train people to go out and walk around buildings in 20 city blocks in downtown Salt Lake City during the migration season, so during spring and fall, when you have birds that are migrating at night and could be drawn into our area. And so, yeah, basically our volunteers are out there just looking for any birds that have collided with the windows. We have people note the location of the bird, the species, if we can identify it to species. And then we have a special permit, so we can actually collect those birds, and we give them to the Natural History Museum of Utah, and they've used them in a recent exhibit as well.
Can you actually describe, so how many of the bird species that we have in Utah, or maybe in North America or in Western North America? Boy, there's so many different ways we could go at this, but how many of them are migratory? And then you talked about night migration. Is that the sort of norm for most birds?
Yeah, so a majority of the birds that breed in North America are migratory. So certainly many, many birds are moving across the landscape. And then a majority of the migratory birds migrate at night. So it's very common among different bird species to move at night during migration. And it's for a number of reasons. You know, birds can avoid diurnal predators, so they're a little bit safer out there. It's cooler and it's easier for them to like do all the work that they're doing to fly.
And then drawn into cities because of light pollution, I imagine that we don't really specifically understand why that happens. Do we have a guess as to why birds are drawn to the light of cities?
Yeah, so we don't really know, but it seems like, so birds are using natural light as part of the way that they navigate. So using, you know, where the sun sets and where the moon is and kind of these celestial like light cues to move across the landscape in some ways. They also navigate using some other things. And so, you know, as we talked about before, birds didn't evolve for the area below them to be really light. You know, they're used to the area above them being light. And so for whatever reason, maybe similar to like a moth going to a flame or a porch light, birds tend to see areas with a lot of light pollution and kind of fly into them. And then once they're in these really bright areas, it's really hard for them to leave those areas. So they tend to come into bright cities, and then the sort of darker area outside of the city, which is a lot safer for the birds because there isn't all of this glass out there, you know, it's hard for them to leave while they're inside the light. And you know, oftentimes have to wait until morning before they're able to kind of fly out of that area. By then, they're surrounded by glass, and a lot of them do collide with the windows.
I'm wondering, what are the things that we're doing to try and deal with the light pollution problem? And is that problem even dealable with, if that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So light pollution is, I think, a pretty easy environmental issue to battle, because unlike, you know, other types of pollution, once you stop the source, once you either shield or turn out the light, it's not in the environment anymore. You know, you don't have to deal with the residual effects of things out there. It's really easy solution. So the aviary, kind of in response to this issue, started a local lights out program. We call it Lights Out Salt Lake. There are these types of programs in many cities across the world. But the basic idea is that if people can turn out their lights at night during the peak migration season, any decrease in light pollution can sort of help these little birds fly on their way instead of coming down into the city. So turning out lights, shielding lights so they're pointed downward rather than up into the sky. There's also like color temperature is important. So the warmer colors are better for wildlife. So having warmer lights out there is good.
Okay, that's good to know. You know, you brought up the fact that a lot of them fly at night. You brought up the fact that most are migratory. I'm wondering how far away the birds that you might see in your backyard or, you know, Farmington Bay or wherever in Utah, how far away they come from.
They come from, you know, South America, for example, our Swainson's hawks who, you know, spend the summer up here. They are in the savannas down in Chile and Patagonia and that area. So, yeah, they can come from quite a distance, and certainly from Central America, Mexico, and a lot of them pass on through. So they're going much further north. They're going up to Alaska or up into the Yukon territory where they'll nest, and then in the fall, they turn around and they come back.
And then Cooper, I'm sorry, I'm going back and forth, but the times of year when people ought to be really specifically considering dimming, turning out, or adjusting their lights to prevent light pollution, when are those?
Yeah, so March through May and August through October. Starting right now, we're going to start seeing migrants coming through. And so now is the time.
Okay. And then just in terms of conservation projects that the aviary is involved in otherwise, I mean, you are the person who's in charge of that aspect of the Tracy Aviary. What does that entail?
Sure. Yeah. So we have a number of projects. And for the most part, we work with the community to do these projects. We think that's sort of the best way to do conservation. And so we have all sorts of ways for community scientists to get involved with things that we're doing. So we work on this collision issue. We also do year-round bird monitoring at 12 different sites in the area. And so we work with partners who manage the sites or who are doing like restoration projects at those sites. And we provide bird data to them so they can measure how well they're doing or create better bird habitat, things like that. We also have a nest box project up at Alta. People can go and monitor nest boxes up there for owls and songbirds that use cavities. We're starting up a project where we're looking at the interaction between beaver activity and bird habitat on the Jordan River, which will be a really cool project for people to get involved with, to kind of better understand all the beaver that are out there and what they're doing to the trees and how that impacts the birds.
And the breeding bird surveys.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Great point, Jean. Yeah. So we're right now starting up a really big project that we do where we train people to do point count surveys during the breeding season. So we get really fine scale data about birds.
And the advantage of getting involved with that, with the breeding bird surveys, is it really is an opportunity to improve your own bird watching skills. So you have to take tests, you have to learn to identify the bird songs and, you know, discover which direction they're calling from you or if you can see them. And so it's really an opportunity to improve your skills. And a lot of bird watchers, I mean, they want to do that. They want to be able to identify the birds they're seeing and hearing. So I have, you know, since I've retired, I just love the fact that there are these community science projects that I can be involved in.
Yeah. for somebody who's just like an amateur out there who happens to be listening, what's your pitch to them, or maybe to somebody who's never gotten into bird watching at all? Why should they pay attention?
Birds really do bring a lot of delight and joy into our world. They themselves are beautiful. They're colorful. People spend, I don't know what the numbers are, but there's an enormous amount of money spent by people bringing birds into their yards, feeding them, putting up water features. And, you know, birds mark our seasons. So with the migratory birds, the return of summer, the coming of fall, I mean, birds are just amazing little creatures, and they are indicators of the health of our environment. And so we should be paying attention to them, and we should be helping our bird friends not smash into windows and get attacked by cats.
Yeah. Well, if people want to learn more or get involved in these projects, how can they do that?
Well, I'd like to direct people to the Great Salt Lake Audubon website, and we do have a page there, Bird Safe Windows, and people can notice that from the Great Salt Lake Audubon homepage. So just if you Google Great Salt Lake Audubon, you'll be there.
Okay. And then Cooper for Tracy Aviary?
For Tracy Aviary, you know, we've got a website, tracyaviary.org. There's a conservation tab on that website, and you can read about all of our projects. And we'll be beginning to recruit people for our collision surveys here in the next few weeks. And so if anyone is interested in getting involved and helping us learn a little bit more about the issue, they can read more about that on the website.
Great. Cooper Farr is Director of Conservation with Tracy Aviary. Jean Lebert chairs the Bird Window Collision Working Group with Great Salt Lake Audubon and is also a board member with that organization. Thank you to you both for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you, Roger. We appreciate you highlighting this issue. It's
Thanks
great.
So much.
I opened up this show talking about the fact that more than two-thirds of the planet's wildlife have disappeared in the last 50 years. The mass extinction that we're seeing today is the result of human activity. We're going to focus some of our future shows on other threats to our portion of the world's dwindling biological diversity. But we need your help. Cooper Farr and Jean Lebert told us about building collisions and their impact on bird species. What other stories of threats to wildlife and biodiversity should we be following? Email us your tips at comments@kcpw.org. That does it for In the Hive today. You can find podcasts at kcpw.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Roger McDonough. Join us again next week.